So today we'll be doing chapter 17 of this text called Kinder Life. I think most of you have it. I'll do some points from the text and then some additional ideas that came to me as I was preparing. So what is a nation or a country? People always think of a nation or a country as being within a geographical boundary. So that the United States is from sea to shining sea, from Atlantic to the Pacific, from the Canadian border to the Mexican border. So we always think of a nation as people living in a particular boundary. But that does not really make a nation. What is most important in a nation or a country, and what makes the nation great and what makes the nation progress and prosper, is they have a common goal. And the people have to be united, have one focus with which the country was founded, like the founding fathers of this nation came up with certain ideas of how the country should be run, and that's the constitution, which determines not only the laws, but what is the purpose or goal or nature of this country. What are we trying to accomplish? And that is very, very important. So there should be a purpose. It's not some people just thrown together and just put together. And the country only will continue to grow and prosper if this common goal is kept in mind. And the common goal should be for all, not only an individual goal, but what is good for the country. That's why in our pledge, we pledge allegiance and all, we say that. And the very important line is one nation under God, indivisible with just liberty and justice for all. So it is one nation which has three very important points in it. One is liberty for all. So everybody should be free to practice their religion, to practice their political beliefs, to work, earn. There should be justice, fairness. It should not happen that somebody who is rich and can afford a big, expensive lawyer gets away with murder, and then some other poor guy does some minor offense and gets 20, 30. Unfortunately, that happens. But that's not the foundation. Justice should be equally administered. Liberty should be for all and under God. And that's very, very important. So a nation has to be founded on religious principles, where God, religion, or devotion to God is the main goal. And if a religion is not founded on religious principles, religious principles does not mean only one religion, like only Christianity or other religions should be persecuted. What it means is that everybody should be allowed to practice religion, and there should be faith in God and free practice of religion, free belief in God, because ultimately it is God that is running everything. God is watching everything. Everything is happening with God's grace, with God's power, with God's strength. Talking about God is watching, there was this robber, this burglar, who was checking out a very rich house. And it so happened that one night the people were out of town, and he checked and the alarm was not on. So he said, wow, that's a great opportunity. The cars are gone. There is nobody home. And so he picked the lock in the middle of the night and got into the house. And with his flashlight, he started searching for all the valuables and the gold and the expensive things. And he was putting them in the bag. He broke open the safe and he was collecting everything. And suddenly he heard a sound, Jesus is watching. He said, who said that? Jesus is watching. He looked. He put his flashlight and there was a parrot. And parrot says, Jesus is watching. I know Jesus always watches. Shut up, let me do my work. Again he starts collecting. Parrot says, I'm telling you, Jesus is watching. He thought, you know, this is a religious parrot. He's trying to give me a religious message. He said, why don't you be quiet? What is your name? He asked the parrot, what is your name? Parrot says, my name is Saint Francis. He says, what kind of an idiot would name his parrot Saint Francis? Parrot says, the same kind of idiot who names his bulldog Jesus. And then he turns around and he hears this growling sound and these two black eyes, and there is this black ferocious bulldog, and the bulldog jumps on him, and this guy is bit and scratched all over, and somehow he drops everything and bruised and bleeding, he runs away from the house. So the point is that, you know, Lord is always watching, but we forget that that is what every action that we perform, there is a higher power that is watching us, and that is not anybody sitting outside, but within us as Om or consciousness. And so one has to be constantly aware that it is the Lord who is working and the Lord who is watching. And so the nation as well as the individual should be run on religious principles, where religious idea should be predominant. Again, to make it clear, not one religion suppressing all others and not letting, but everybody overall should be thinking about what would God want in this situation. When I do this action, will God approve or not approve? And ultimately, as I said, God is your life, your consciousness within. So do I approve? Not I as the body, mind and intellect, but I as the spirit. And the nation can only work when the people are integrated, when the people work together for the benefit of all. But if the people become self-centered, benefit, I'll do what I want, I don't care what happens to the others. And then what it breeds is violence, it breeds competition, it breeds unnecessary, you know, cheating or hurting others, and jealousy and selfishness. And ultimately, what determines the quality of a nation is the individual. Just as a wall or a building is strong, if all the bricks and stones in it are strong, if there is one brick that is missing, or one stone or brick is weak, sooner or later that pressure of that building will crack that brick or that stone, and ultimately the building will collapse. So similarly, just as stones or bricks make up the building and make it strong, so same way a nation is made strong by individuals. And it is each individual who individually contributes to the betterment of the nation. So that is very important, one has to remember. And what unfortunately we are seeing is that politics, economics and science are given a lot of importance. So political dogma in a situation of a nation, whether it's communism or socialism or capitalism or all these dogmas and beliefs, and then people are so firm in that this is the only way and anybody who doesn't practice should be killed. And that's what happened in the Cold War when Russia and America were, and even now, even though they are not directly fighting, indirectly they are. Like one is supporting India, other one is supporting Pakistan. One is supporting Israel, other one is supporting Palestine. One is supporting one group in Syria, another one. So these political dogmas, to make themselves powerful, they propagate this, and they want everybody to become communist or everybody to become capitalist or socialist. So in the process of political dogma, the country can only do well if people work for the benefit of the country. If the people stop working and think about themselves, then the country goes down. The Roman Empire, at one time the Roman Empire dominated not only the whole of Europe and extended all the way up to Asia. And why? Because everybody said, you know, what is good for the Roman Empire is good for me. And so they worked hard and they were soldierly, and but then afterwards what happened? They plundered all these countries, took all the wealth, and then Romans started enjoying life. you know, they said, then they hired Germans to become soldiers. And the Romans themselves were enjoying life, partying, drinking, all kinds of, you know, debauchery. It's said that they used to have parties where they would eat so much, there would be so much food. I know it's kind of gross. But they had these bitches, like these little things around, and they would eat so much and then put a feather in their throat so they could throw up and then go back and eat more. You know, that's the extent of the... The point was that nobody was interested in what is good for Rome. How can I enjoy life? And so what happened? Slowly, slowly, the empire went down, soldiers became less, and ultimately the country was taken over by all the invaders, the same German soldiers whom they had hired to join with other German soldiers and plundered the country, and then the country went down, and there is no more Roman Empire, all the buildings. So political dogma can only take you so far if the will of all is considered. Same way economic wealth. You know, I'm not saying that we should not have economic or scientific or political, but that alone should not determine how a country lives. Economic wealth, now that is good. You know, yes, we need to have wealth, we need to be successful, we need to have industries, we need to have capitalism, we need to have success. But unfortunately, what happens is that the wealth becomes very unequally distributed. Even in communist countries, which are supposed to be socialist and for the benefit of all, we find a few people have all the power, few people have all the wealth, and the others are just living like ordinary folk. And that happens everywhere. There are a few very rich people. And then, especially if you look in places like India or Brazil or in African countries, Asian countries, there are a few people who are very, very rich, and the majority are extremely poor. So even though economic wealth is there, it does not get distributed. It gets concentrated in the hands of few and becomes a form of discontent. Same thing, scientific progress. Scientific progress is wonderful. We should have science. We should have progress. But when science is used for destruction, that is when the problem. The science is very good. We must have, but when we split the atom, and the atom was for nuclear energy, was for generating energy, but became a means of destroying cities. You know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The story of Alfred Nobel, you might have heard. He was a great Swedish chemist. His father was a great chemist. He learned chemistry from his father, never went to school except 1.5 years, and then studied under other chemists, and he wanted to make dynamite. And so he ended up making dynamite. First he tried nitroglycerin, and that didn't work. So then he ended up making dynamite. And dynamite, he thought it will help in bridges and, you know, creating roads and, you know, transportation. But soon dynamite started being used in weapons of war, and he had patents, and he made millions of dollars. Not only that, but his father had made an arms company, and he expanded that, and he started making weapons, Bofors, which is still around. It is still a company in Sweden, and they make arms and sell them to all over the world. And so there was an article in a French newspaper that called him the merchant of death, that he's prospering on the death of others, and he's becoming rich. And somehow that article hit him so much. He said, what have I done? You know, I've created weapons. I've created dynamite, which is destroying bridges and killing so many people. And I've made this weapon, a factory. And he just suddenly changed his mind. And he became a philanthropist. All his money before his death, every penny, he didn't leave anything for his family. He put all in a trust which is run by the Nobel, you know, Academy, as you know. And the Nobel Prize came, and he said every year there should be a prize for economics, for medicine, for physics, and a prize for literature and for peace, that whoever works for world peace. So that, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of dollars are given each year, because that many millions he had in the trust, and just from the interest from that. So the point is that science can be very useful, but it can also become a means for destruction. So even though physical, political progress, economic wealth, and scientific progress are very important, But what is the goal and purpose of all these? Of all these three is service. The political institutions, the economic wealth, and the scientific progress should be created for service of the country. And what is service of the country is sacrifice. So not only service, but sacrifice. That's why John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. So each and every individual is responsible for making sure that my nation, and ultimately we all, if we think about it, now the world is shrinking, where the boundaries are no longer as valid as they were. Through internet, you can see anything going on anywhere in the world, and with travel, and slowly the whole earth will become a nation. And so we have to see what is good for, not only for me, not only for my city, not only for my community, but what is good for the nation, and ultimately what is good for the planet. And that's why conservation and global warming and all those things, you know, one has to practice, where we don't destroy the environment, we don't destroy the water, we don't destroy the, pollute the air, you know, we don't destroy our resources, natural resources. So each one of us should have an attitude of service and sacrifice, then only the nation can do well. And it is the responsibility of each individual, not only the president, or not only the prime minister, or not only the secretary of state, but each and every one of us. And religion, again, as I mentioned, has to be the basis, because religion is the science of life. Religion is, people think religion is only going to the temple and praying, you know, lighting a lamp, or going to the church and lighting a candle, or going to the Gurudwara and, you know, singing a few hymns and coming out. That is not religion. That is rituals. We had talked about that last time. But what is more important is not the rituals, but the philosophy. And so religion is a science of life. And that's what we study in the Bhagavad Gita. Those of you who come, in fact, this coming Sunday, we will be restarting the Bhagavad Gita on 11, at Sunday at 11. And the Bhagavad Gita is the best text for man to evolve, because it teaches us how to live life. It's not only a religious or a spiritual book, but is a manual of life. And so science of life, that is what religion is. Religion is not just mere prayers or mere, yes, those are very important. Rituals are important, buildings are important, books are important. But religion should not only be confined to the buildings or to the books, but should become a part of my life. I should become a religious, and I should become a spiritual person. That's why we had talked last week. Religions are many, but spirituality is one. The ideas are one, but they appear to be different in the Bible, in the Quran, in the Guru Granth Sahib, in the Bhagavad Gita. But the essential values of all are one. So that should be the way, and dedication, where I dedicate myself to the benefit of all. So for example, in the city, now there is a city councilman who gets elected. Immediately his responsibility or her responsibility is what is good for the city, not what is good for my ward where I was elected from, or not what is good for me, what will make me rich, or what will make my community better, my church or my religion, but what is good for the city of Bakersfield. Similarly, somebody gets elected to the state legislature, and then his thinking should be what is good for the state of California, not what is good for Los Angeles or San Francisco or Bakersfield or the Central Valley, but what is good for, not only what is good for farmers, or a farmer might say, I'll only do what is good for farmers, or what is good for my particular industry. No, what is good for the whole state of California, because then I know I am a citizen of California and I'm representing the state of California in the legislature. So that's how. Similarly, I become a congressman or a senator and I go to Washington, D.C., it's the same thing. I should forget that I'm a resident of California or Alabama or Tennessee, but I am now a senator or a congressman that is responsible for running the country. And so what is good for the country should be more important than what is good for my state. And unfortunately, people forget that. And even once they get elected, they start, you know, sending money to their state and then doing things which are only good for me and my community. So dedication to a higher cause, where I'm no longer a citizen of Bakersfield or a citizen of New York, but I'm a citizen of the United States. And then, as I had said earlier, the highest is I'm a citizen of the earth. This whole earth is our nation, is our home. And so I have to do what is good for everyone, not only what is good for the United States. So a spirit of togetherness and love is very important. And togetherness and love can only come when I sacrifice my goodness, my being, my personal glory for the glory of all, my personal selfishness and for unselfishness. So as they said, that as long as I'm thinking of me, myself, and I, then the life will become conflict, will become struggle. And the more I do things for myself, more I acquire for myself, more vasanas I develop, the more selfish I become, the more desires I get, and more selfish actions, the further away I go from the Lord within. And so the more that's why the principle of Karma Yoga, which is what we are doing in the Bhagavad Gita on Sunday at 11, where they talk about how, what is Karma Yoga? Karma is action. Yoga is action united with the higher huge. So when my actions are united with a higher goal, like from a personal goal, it can become what is good for my family. From my family, what is good for my community or my church, and then so on, my city, my state. So the wider I make, the less ego. The more ego is what is good for me or my family. But as I say what is good for my city, what is good for my state, what is good for my country, and then these great leaders and saints and prophets did not belong to one country or one state or one community, but they did what was good for all of mankind. So the more I expand my horizon of thinking, the less my ego becomes, the less myself. And the whole purpose of life is to, as I said many times, there are only two purposes to taking birth, human birth. Only two things I have to do. One is serve others, and second is reach God. And actually, there is only one purpose, reach God. That is the only purpose of human birth, is to realize God and know God. And that has to be decided by every one of us. Yes, so what does service do? Service purifies my mind. As I work for others, it reduces my vasanas, my selfishness. And in a pure mind, knowledge can come. When a mind is pure, full of love, compassion, kindness, sharing, then such a person, when he or she reads the scriptures, the knowledge becomes clear. But as long as this personal ego or agenda is there, the knowledge will not stay. So that is the essence of this talk today, that a nation is one that has a common goal under God, where there's integration, less selfishness, where individual rights are respected, and political, economic, and scientific progress is done for the benefit of all, not for a particular small group. And the idea of service and sacrifice and dedication, and people should live in togetherness and love. So that is the essence of this chapter. Swamiji has spoken it very beautifully, and then I try to add a few ideas. That means any comments, anything anybody would like to add?
Well, the idea itself sounds very good, but it's a little bit platonic, because through our history there have been so many nations coming in out and so forth, and the world population is just growing. and seems not to stop. So when is this gonna? Where are we heading according to you? I mean the subject. So the idea is very platonic, but will it reach a point where everybody's gonna realize that, or how's that work?
I think as the world population grows, I think two things will happen. One is we'll become more efficient. Like now we find that cars, they're predicting in the next 8 or 10 years will be all electric cars. Because electric cars only have, like a Tesla only has 8 parts, moving parts, while the regular car has 100 moving parts. And it's so much cheaper and so much more efficient and does not pollute the atmosphere. So they are predicting that in 10, 15 years, gasoline will go out. The gasoline companies will collapse because everybody will be driving self-driven electric cars where you just get on the car, go somewhere, pay, and then you leave. You don't even own a car. And like what is happening in many places with bicycles, you can pick up a bike. I don't know, somewhere in San Francisco, there is this plan where you put your credit card and the bike gets unlocked. You drive, ride the bike, you leave it there. It's an electric bike.
Bird is called Bird.
Huh?
The bike company is called Bird, and it's centered around Santa Monica.
Right. Santa Monica, also in San Francisco, I've heard.
There's another different company.
Yes. So one, the people will become more efficient, and there will be more utilization. But eventually, I think what's going to become a problem is water. See, right now, the wars are fought over oil, then wars will be fought over water. Again, the people will then, you know, make more water from the ocean. So human beings will adapt, will become more efficient and more productive. But who knows, 100 years from now or 200 years from now, even before that, there may be some madman who releases a nuclear bomb and destroys all. But the point is that even if the earth is destroyed, so what? Earth is a very tiny, tiny, tiny planet, and all these billions of galaxies, and I'm sure there are millions of billions of planets like Earth where there are people living. We think we are very important, but in the totality, we are nothing. We're just like a speck of sand on the beach. So if Earth is destroyed, so what? There's life going on everywhere. And for the total consciousness or God, if Earth goes, so what? I mean, more Earth will be created. Yes.
Yes. Do you know how much fresh water goes into the ocean in North America? Incredible amount of fresh water.
Yes.
Is going into the ocean.
Yeah.
That's right. In Northern California, especially.
Yeah. Right. Well, in California, you know, we use most of our water. A little goes into the ocean. Some of it goes into the ocean. But in Canada, you know, I would say 98, 99% of the fresh water goes into the ocean.
Right.
And they have heavy rainfall. And so there's a lot of, if we built the channels or made agreements,
right,
we wouldn't even need solemnization, just the aqueducts leading.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right. Water will be conserved. But like places like Arabia, they are already doing that. They're building large desalination plants.
Yeah.
In India, now the solar energy is becoming so popular. They're building thousands and thousands of solar plants, and they're going to stop burning coal. So eventually, that's what they said, coal and oil will become thing of the past. Nobody will be using it.
Desalinization is probably the most expensive way to get fresh water. It's incredibly expensive.
Right, but eventually it will become cheaper as there's mass production and improvements in technology. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
There are areas that need it, like
Arabia,
and maybe Australia.
Right.
I mean, even then, if Australia built aqueducts from the northern part of the continent, they would not need desalination.
Or from the interior, yes.
Yeah. Well, the northern part of the continent gets the rainfall.
So human beings will become more efficient. Maybe they'll make colonies on Mars. But of course, those will be too expensive to maintain. But on the moon, we may say. But even if, like I said, even if there is a nuclear holocaust, so what? You will all be born somewhere else. We'll be born on a different planet. See, the life will not end as we know it. Earth is a small little thing. We is floating somewhere in. So.
I actually believe there is some like spiritual power keeping us from destroying us.
Yes. Yes.
So far, but you know that power could get tired of us. You know,
no, that's true.
Most of us are already tired of this.
No, that's the right, the spiritual power, and they say it is good people who meditate. You know why the rain falls and why the earth is maintained? Because there are good people. People who are sitting in the monasteries and in the forests and in the deserts, who are just meditating, not for themselves, but for the welfare of all. So it is these good people who are keeping the earth alive, and we think that it is, but it is really. In fact, they say rain falls. If there is one spiritual person in an area, the rain will fall for him or her. So the power of meditation, the power of good intentions and good thoughts is very important. So I think all we can do is do our bit to help make it a better place, spread good energy, spread positive energy through meditation, through prayer, you know, pray for the welfare of all. Not only for my son or my daughter or my mother or my father, but you know, we have this prayer, Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, Sarve Santu. May everybody be happy, may everybody be free from disease, may everybody have good you know, luck, and may nobody have bad problems happen. So praying for the benefit of all humans, animals, plants, birds, fish, you know, for the welfare of all. But thank you, that's very good. I don't know, did it answer your question?
Thank you. Well, thanks.
Huh?
That if, let's say, several billion people were to die more or less at the same time, what a mess that would be to sort out where those souls would go. You
know? No.
The system is set up now, so a certain amount of people die at a year.
Few billion is nothing.
A billion? I don't know.
For Earth. But if you count the totality, how many billions of beings are there? Billions and trillions. And humans are only 0.2% of the total life on this earth. Human beings are only 0.2% of all the souls. If you count all the insects and the birds and the fish and the animals and the plants. So we think we are very important, but in the total, a few billion souls is nothing. Few billion souls die every day. If you count all the plants that get destroyed and all the insects. Mm-hmm. Some insects only live 12 hours. They're born in the morning. So, and for the totality, billion is nothing for that Lord.
I kind of think it would stress the spiritual system.
No.
To have, maybe half the human population
no.
die at once.
No, it won't.
It wouldn't? I think it would stress it.
No, not at all.
Doesn't the system work continually?
No, the system is too big. They'll just be born in some other planet. Nothing will happen. The Lord is infinite. The earth is a very tiny little part. So we have to stop thinking we are very important.
No, I don't think we're important.
But we are nobodies.
No.
Work with that attitude, then you're fine.
It appears that there are spiritual powers that are invested in keeping things
right
as they are, so people, you know, and under the system that it exists, and sometimes you and I don't really like it that much, but...
Right.
So they would be. They would also be interested in keeping and preserving the system as it is.
Yes.
And not to allow anything radical to cause great trouble.
Yeah, but I think if once competition becomes fierce and resources become less, you know, we don't know what will happen 100 years, 200. It's impossible to predict. Yeah. Any more questions?
I have one thing.
Yes.
Isn't medical science coming up with things to keep people forever?
Yes, I mean, that's another thing. Medical science, we are increasing life expectancy. Previously, people used to, average life expectancy was in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's gone up to the 70s, and it will be 100, and people will be living to 110, 120. So it will, the resources will be utilizing more resources, and there'll be less younger people to take care of. And people are not having children. People are not getting married as much, especially in Europe. And even here, what is happening is the number of children are getting less. So a lot of changes are happening. But the way I look at it is, what am I doing with my life? Am I making myself better, and am I making people around me better? So that is all I can do. Rest is up to him. It's his world. He made it. I didn't create. I was just appeared here a few years back, and I'll be gone. So what am I doing to make myself a better person? That is one very important point. That's what I have understood in life.
A question to propose to you was Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada, you know, the founder of the Krishna consciousness. He said that it's a bad age. We're in a bad age, but it's Kali Yuga.
Kali Yuga, right?
Yeah, it's a bad age in which many maybe unwanted people and undesirable people are being born.
Right, right.
And that might be one of the indications.
Right, but what, according to Hinduism, there are four yugas, Satyug, Dwapar Yug, Treta Yug, and then Kaliyug. And after Kaliyug, Satyug comes again, so it's a cycle. So when Kaliyug ends, then the good age will start again. And, you know, that's why these kind of books and these kind of gatherings, you know, which is the...
How is Kaliyuga supposed to end?
It is supposed to end where people...
In destruction or...
Either in destruction or with the knowledge, where the wise people come, and with understanding, slowly it evolves. I don't know how it's supposed to end, but it is supposed to be end in goodness. So already they are saying the seeds of goodness are being planted. Yeah. So it's not all pessimistic life.
Like a lot of things are getting out of hand.
Yeah, but it's okay.
Humans are not exercising efficient or effective enough control over their systems. The political and governmental systems are not managing all these.
Yes,
problems.
Yes. But again, I tell them it's your world. You worry about it. It's not mine. I didn't create it. I'm just here.
I'm
not the blame, and I'm not the praise. I'm just here to live my life and reach God. Yeah.